But they've shown me the photos on the wall. Is that sort of what you got started with?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of those photos are some of the first ones I took.
Really?
Yeah.
They're great.
Those are some of my favorites. I spent a lot of time choosing those because I can sit here and talk to you
about each one.
Yeah. I could tell you 20 minutes story about each of them.
So far left, huge bucket working, looks like a pit or a quarry that's filled mm-hmm. with water. Is that Florida by chance?
That's Florida.
Yeah.
So down
in South Florida, I'm assuming somewhere.
South Florida, yeah. That's the FEC, or that's not FEC, that's White Rock.
Okay.
The White Rock Quarry, one of the two biggest quarries in the United States. It's White Rock, and then FEC is on the other side of the road, and they swap back and forth.
Have you ever seen that down there?
I haven't yet. Keys trips? No.
It's massive territory out there. It's like you wouldn't assume that exists in Florida.
Really?
It's massive.
So
and the equipment is like see it from miles away. Mm-hmm. Big.
That's big.
Huge.
Huh?
It's huge.
Yeah. It's a on that machine. I think they run like it's around 115 yard bucket. It's a 115 yard perforated bucket. So what happens is there's so much, the water table is so high and there's so much damn water in Florida that they can't just dewater a pit.
Right.
So they blast. So actually the cap rock is below the water table. So you'll have a swamp and there'll be trees and it'll be swampy and it'll be just that muck. It'll be 5-10 feet of garbage. So they have to scrape the garbage off the cap rock. But the problem is the cap rock's below the water table. So they have to scrape this off while working in the water. And it's a garbage. It's just a terrible process. You see the stripping machines and they're just beat to hell because they're working in this muck all day.
Yeah. Right.
So they strip it off the cap rock, but then they have to bring in sometimes millions, hundreds of thousands of tons of crushed stone to build a pad above the water table on top of the cap rock.
Really?
Then they put their drills on there. They drill it in just one go. So it's these wacky drills that are just in Florida because they need to get 50 feet of steel in one go. And then they put the 50-foot hole. They blast underwater. It's all happening underwater. They come through with the drag line. They mine it 50 foot underwater. So they just cast the bucket into the water, pull it up, grab the aggregate, flop it up on the surface right next to the machine, and then they'll come in after it's drained. They'll come in and mine it.
What a wild operation. I didn't realize that all that went into it. Mm-hmm. I just know I've seen it driving by the turnpike or the highway or whatever. I didn't realize it was that intensive an operation.
It's crazy.
And it sounds like unique to those mines in Florida.
It's just a Florida thing.
That's awesome.
It's just a Florida. I mean, they'll use drag lines in South Carolina, Georgia. Okay. So it's not just Florida, but every single big aggregate operation in Florida, at least I've seen, is you're mining underwater. Process. So you're either using big excavators or a drag line. There's only one way to do it.
Interesting.
And then it's all seashells. So you look at the material and it's all just old seabed. That's all it is. Straight line.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I saw that picture. I wondered. The other pictures with the people in it were fantastic too, but that one caught my eye because I thought it was Florida. I was curious. So
that was a cool morning. It just outside of Miami.
Yeah. But it looked like it was morning time. It's beautiful. Background.
The
landscape is unmistakable.
Yeah.
So.
Well, how are we looking, Alex?
I think we're good.
All right, cool, man. Ready to podcast? Ready to do a dirt talk?
Let's do a dirt talk.
Check. Well, welcome to the Dirt Talk Studios, everybody.
This is awesome.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. Can you, for everybody, let's start with what the heck you guys do. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about how you guys started and all that jazz. But what the heck do you do?
Yeah. Give it a shot.
So we make sure you're safe and make money and are productive at the same time by just making sure you don't hit any utilities, right? So we have different service lines. So we have a utility locating line, but we also have concrete scanning and imaging.
Sure.
So, you know, anytime they're going to core, they're going to saw cut, we'll go through and check and make sure you're not going to hit any conduit or any critical reinforcement.
Yeah. Can you explain that? I didn't know that was a thing. And then I found out that's very much a thing. So say I'm in this concrete building, concrete structure, and I want to cut a floor opening because I want a staircase going down to the next floor I'm remodeling.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So can you explain what you guys would do and why that's important? And then talk about like post-tensioning, for example, mm-hmm. and why I don't want to hit post-tensioning.
Yeah. So there are main things that we look for when we're concrete scanning, right? So post-tension is probably the biggest thing that we're looking for. And what that is typically every, you know, few feet on center, you'll have these cables that they lay down before they pour. They'll pour, they'll come back, and they'll actually anchor onto the side of the building and tension them. And now these things, I don't know what the PSI is, Chris. Do you know what the...
It's 26,000 pounds of pressure.
Yeah, it's something crazy.
They measure in kips.
In kips.
So, 26 kips. Yeah.
Engineering talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That, I sounded cool.
Actually. Yeah, the word that's, there we that's go. Super cool.
So they're so tight, right? They're so tension that if you do cut through one, I mean, you can watch YouTube videos of them ripping through floors, even, you know, tearing through windows and cars, all kinds of stuff because... someone cored right through that cable at that certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So, it, I mean, it lines up with, again, how we serve the dirt world in the utility locating space, but we're just really trying to make sure that A, they're safe. B, that they can get their job done effectively and they can make money while doing it because they don't have to worry about hitting a cable that costs upwards of $5,000 to $10,000 in itself to repair and fix, right?
Sure.
So... that's what our main purpose is. It's just 100% subsurface damage prevention.
So subsurface, concrete, earth, whatever that is, you're right. Just making sure people don't hit stuff they shouldn't below a surface.
That's right.
Correct.
You got it.
Yep.
That's our world.
That's a pretty, it's an underappreciated world that you guys live in, and often a cursed world that you guys live in.
I was going to say, underappreciated, or it is rightly positioned in their mind because they've had a bad experience where something has not been located or found, and they've gotten into it, and somebody's gotten hurt, or there's been extra costs, or schedule's been delayed,
right?
Et cetera.
So, dude, I am sure we could have a whole podcast on just stories about utilities that should not have been where they were, but yet they were. They were there, and the excavator bucket is a super good. You guys are good at finding utilities, but it's an excavator bucket by far better than you guys.
Absolutely.
It is interesting how it seems like it beats the odds, right?
It
like
does.
Of all the places it's going to dig, it's going to find that
bucket. Yeah, I'm telling you, man, there's just nothing like it.
Yep.
Where do you guys operate? Where do you guys work?
Nationwide.
Nationwide, yep.
Nationwide.
Yeah, so there's about 375 GPRS team members around the country right now.
375?
Yep. Yeah, area managers, Holy project smokes. Managers.
In the field, though, right?
In the field. Yeah, about 550 of us total.
Correct.
From a back office standpoint. Yeah, it's been a fun 20-year crazy journey to be a part of. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I guess how'd this whole thing start?
Yeah, so a company started in Ohio. The current president, Matt, was son of an individual who owned a concrete cutting company.
Mm-hmm.
And when he graduated, worked a few odd jobs after school, like most of us have done, and was ready to go into business with his dad, or so he thought. And his dad said, hey, I think you should check out this thing called ground penetrating radar.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, we just worked a job at a grocery store, and we cut a bunch of slab out of the grocery store and hit a ton of conduit, shut down freezers, et cetera. And this stuff Super is supposed cool. to help us make sure that doesn't happen. So why don't you do this business? And as the story goes, you know, he picked up the equipment and went a few months without any work at all out there trying to pass his business card out. And slowly but surely, customers saw some value in what he was offering. Did a large post-tension job originally back in the day that kind of, you know, was the springboard to the company having some financial solvency and being able to grow from there. So up until I joined 5 years into the company, and I was the sixth person in the company.
Damn.
Yeah. So 5 years of small time hustling, trying to make a go of it in a few different markets, Toledo, Detroit area, Cleveland area, Cincy, and Chicago were some of the initial markets that we had.
Hmm.
And then jumped on board 25, worked a couple odd jobs after school, and ground penetrating radar. Yeah, that was what I went to school for.
Yeah, so, what is that, right?
Exactly. And then headed south. And so from there, the company's just kind of done a phenomenal trajectory of growth. It's really been amazing. And I think you were referencing, as we were sitting down to chat, the core values that Buildwood is based on. And similarly, even if unnamed in the beginning, there was just kind of mentality of character matters.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now probably rambling, but it's what I think ultimately has led to the portion of success is the people, what make the business actually become something pretty fantastic.
Sure.
So you
were doing the ground penetrating radar from a building standpoint. When do you get into the underground utilities world? Because it's similar technology, but very, 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 very different.
Yeah, that's right.
Different application for sure.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So we, company started mainly in concrete. You're exactly right. And then technology, same application of the science, different size antennas used to see deeper, right? And so slowly there was increased interest in utility work. And I think even when I started at 5 years into the company, we had just gotten our first EM locators, what you would see the one call team members use on the side of the field. They wave that wand back and forth, just layered that in as a tool that we would use in the field for our service as well. And so that was the point at which we started looking at utility. So what's kind of wild is initially you would have seen probably a 70-30 split of revenue, 70% of our revenue generated through concrete scanning, 30% mm-hmm. through utilities. And that's completely flipped in the time that we've been in the industry. And so most of our work now is in utility space.
There's so many questions here. So, if anybody in the industry is aware, I'm going out to go put a new water line in the middle of a road. And for those that don't know, there's a lot of other stuff under that road that you got to make sure you can find before you start digging for that new water line.
That's right.
So how does it, I know you know, I have had to file my tickets, you know, your locates tickets. That was the bane of my existence as a field engineer. And you have to call for locates is the term.
Right.
Who do you guys work for? How does that work? If I call 811, do I get you guys sometimes? If I'm in the area, or are you completely different? I'm a private company working on private land. I need someone to come locate.
You got it.
So you're in the private world.
Yeah. So the one call locators of the world, great service they offer, normally contracted by the utility owners.
Yes.
And then you, as the contractor operating in a right of way of some type, will likely have. The utility owner has some type of infrastructure in place, and they then are responsible to locate that for you.
Mm-hmm.
The moment that hits a meter or crosses onto private property, it's now the property owner's responsibility, and that's where we would come in. Our business model serves that in that private space, but mainly on the commercial construction side.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. So what's an example of when you guys would get called out?
Yeah. So example would be they're running a new water line. We'll stick with your example there. And they're going to tie into the main in the center of the road or wherever it might be, just off the road in the right of way. But they're going to run on property to a new hospital building that's being constructed at one of the local hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will call us out. You have to go through, by law, the 811 locate process. We would come out, start and pick up where they leave off and run our locate from the point it hits private property to the point at which you're connecting that new water line to the new structure that's being built.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the process, anything we find underground, mark, flag, map it, whatever the case might be, turn over some type of deliverable to the customer that says, here's what you need to look out for. And you said you want to run the line here. We actually could see a better path over here. Would you consider that? So,
oh, really?
Yeah, offering some type of consultative solution-oriented focus for them, not just to show up and say there's a pipe, but say, here's what that pipe could mean to your effort as you dig.
But you just mark it up to the property line. So, and then the other service would take it from the property line to the main in that public right of way.
Yes. However, a lot of times we will actually do the public right of way as well after 811 helps because we can give you depths too. It depends on your jurisdiction on 811. I'm not sure what their process is like there, but we will give you depths on those utilities. So imagine that you're going to bore.
Yeah.
Now you're trying to oscillate through those utilities. To your point, it's way loaded in there. So you want to know pretty dead on, hey, where can I stick my drill? And we'll go through and locate that public space as well for you and that whole private space. That way, you know, not only horizontal position, but also the vertical position. And then again, that way you can effectively bore or dig or do whatever you need to.
Let's be honest. Some of the public locate guys don't have the best reputation in the industry. I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
They kind of show up and I mean, sometimes they wave the wand around, but sometimes you're like, is that thing even on? Is he actually looking for something or is he just painting marks on the road? Cause I don't know about that guy. And it's kind of the belief very much. So the belief, and I think it's just good practice, but it's very much trust, but verify. You guys are saying where these things are, but you don't truly know where the hell they are until you dig it up and look at it for yourself.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of, you know, they do get a bad rap. And we joked about this earlier too, that the locator in general can get a bad rap because you're locating something and it's not what you said it was or something to that effect.
Well, they're a very convenient scapegoat too.
Well, and that is true. That is true. Yep. But even on the one call side, they're operating off of the information provided by the utility owner. And that utility owner may say, hey, my as-built, which we all know that phrase means probably not anywhere near what the drawing says, right?
Yeah.
Shows the line on this side of the street. So no reason to locate. It's over here. And then the contractor goes, digs, hey, actually that line was located over here. And the locator was going off of records when they were on site. Does that make sense? So there's a lot of reasons why they might end up providing less than adequate information that isn't necessarily due to the individual in the field performing that service at that moment.
Sure.
So anyway, for what it's worth, always a little bit more nuanced and complex answer to why a pipe didn't get located or found. But at the end of the day, they just care about, did we hurt somebody? What's our project delay? Those types of things. And as you were saying, that's why we exist. Try to keep those things moving forward. Keep people safe.
Sure. That's very generous to locate professionals. So that was a very generous way of putting it.
Because how many times have we, received that phone call in the back end? You joke, you located this site, but we just found the pipe you said wasn't there. And it's, well, let me try to explain it to you. And there's no interest at that point, of course. Right. And understandably so.
Right.
So we've been the guy, not just the public guy, but we've been the private guy who's not had a good day that day.
They've got a really cool fountain on site or whatever
it is. Exactly.
Or God forbid it's like a fiber line or something like that.
Those things are expensive.
That's when the money starts
running.
So why is it that there's pipes underground that people don't know are there? How come that's a thing? Where's the disconnect from a utility standpoint? And why are you guys working off an incomplete treasure map a lot of times?
Well, if we had even a treasure map when we showed up on site, that'd be a good day.
Most of the time we don't.
Most of the time you show up and it's to anybody looking, it could be a green field or a brown field. Nobody knows. We just know we want the scan to make sure we don't hit anything.
Really?
Especially in private, right? I mean, in private property, a lot of times you're not having all your stuff mapped out.
Yeah.
And so, public places, they'll obviously have their as-built, at least recorded. But, when it comes to public, it's anyone's game most of the time.
That is pretty wild. You think if you bury a gas line, you probably should remember where that thing's at, but that's just not the case in a lot of places.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, why guys like Preston are so successful at GPRS, or some of the good locators that the listeners might be aware of or know of by name, because they want them to be on their site because they're so good. Mm. Their best skill is being a puzzle builder. They go and, are there any drawings? They go and talk to the person who's been at the plant or the facility for 40 years and was there when the line went in. They also then can use the technology to help piece and stitch together this whole framework of what's actually happening underground. So we always say it's not about just finding a pipe or using a piece of technology. It's, can you problem solve and piece all that together?
So. Sure. Okay, so I call you guys out. So what happens? You just talked about it a little bit, but you show up on a site. What goes on? Can you talk me through that?
Yeah. So something that we recently worked on too is we have a project coordination team, right? So if you call one of the numbers on our website and it has the different offices and everything, but you'll get in touch with a project coordinator. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we work directly with them, really trying to deliver you almost an Amazon-like experience, right? Mm-hmm. Where
nice.
It's quick. And we're there when you want us there, and we have all the information beforehand. That way we're trying, eliminating as many points of communication as possible, right?
But sure.
You'll talk to that project coordinator. That project coordinator typically will call the project manager or schedule them on our calendar. And in that calendar, we have who the site contact information is, any drawings that we might have, and when we need to be there. And so you'll usually get a call the day before saying, hey, we're going to be there 8 a.m. and we show up, and then we walk through the site and we locate anything you're looking for or anything that you're concerned about.
How do you locate things?
So
explain that.
We have something called the SIM process. And to your point earlier, like, there is that stigma of locators, right? And there is that reputation of there's a lot of error in here. So this is something that we've been working on, and Chris can riff on this a little bit more too, but, we use part of the SIM process, or subsurface investigation methodology, is a standardized process in which we use multiple technologies. So we talked about the wand, right? That we see everyone waving around.
Yeah.
So we do use that, and that can be effective for some things for sure. And then we also use something called ground penetrating radar, right? It's a big radar antenna. And typically that's most effective for finding, most if there's no tracer wires, everything, but a lot of our water lines, a lot of our sanitary lines, any storm, and it will also pick up, you know, any kind of conduit that's in there within its certain limitations of that technology.
Is that in the modern ground penetrating radar, is that the thing where it looks like you're mowing the lawn almost?
Like a stroller, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're walking this thing around the site and it's just scanning whatever's underneath
that's
the ground.
That's it, yeah.
Yep. How does ground penetrating radar work?
Well, great question.
And we don't have too long, say, but yeah. Give me the
scientific answer would not be found.
6 year old.
Yeah, I was going to say, Preston and I would not be the ones to give you the scientific answer on that. Yeah. So effectively, these technologies, the wand or radar, are electromagnetic tools. Mm-hmm. So the radar emits an electromagnetic pulse into the ground and then reflects off of objects. And that reflection is received at that antenna as well. Mm. And then that is then interpreted by the computer and put on the screen in terms of, we joke with people always say, oh, is that a boy, when they see us on the job site, because it just looks like a big gray screen that we're staring at looking for hyperbolas, pipe-like shapes underground, that type of thing.
So how do you know it's not a rock?
You don't.
Huh.
Until you run the process. And so the process involves a grid out scan. So you would say, hey, I'm this site, based on what I understand about it, I'm going to run a 10-foot grid spacing as I scan over it. And so you go back and forth. Well, if it's a repeating anomaly, and you know, you probably got a pipe that travels to some type of, you know, gas meter or fire hydrant, whatever the case may be, water line, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we end up figuring it out.
So, and based on how long it takes to reflect, is it gives you your depth.
100% correct. That's right. Yeah. So then a lot goes into what is the soil composition. So in Florida, where Press and I live, Central Florida, sandy soil composition, not going to contain or hold moisture very well.
Yeah.
And the signal flies through that ground. We get great results. You move up north, even in the area we're in today in Nashville, results are much more limited. So depth penetration changes, and how far can the antenna see into the ground diminishes the more clay content, the more moisture content soils you're trying to push that signal through.
Does rock affect it?
Mm-hmm.
If it's just absolutely straight rock?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you guys have some of that around here too, I think.
There is. The joke is it's Tennessee topsoil because it is it's nothing but rock.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, just look right next door.
That blast site next door is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's this big hole that they took. It's all straight rock.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It is wild. It is wild.
What happens when it's a really big site?
Yeah, so the process itself helps us think through the way to attack it. So you start with knowns on the job site. Hey, we know because of hydrant, gas meter, whatever,
there's
electrical,
here.
Yeah, substation, yeah, whatever. There's something here, and we'll start with the knowns, trace the knowns. So we call it pipe by pipe and type by type. You go pipe by pipe that you can see, type by type, electric, water, gas, sewer, et cetera. And walk yourself through that process using those different tools. And we try to use the tool that's most effective for the locate. So for example, an electrical line that's live will carry a live signal that our wand can pick up without needing to use the radar to find it. No reason to use two tools. Now we've just eliminated, saved some time on the job site to go a little bit more quickly. So you consider the job site type by type, pipe by pipe, consider the technology it's best used to find those types of objects and tackle it in such a way that you are starting the area of most and highest concern, and you work yourself out from that area to the places where there's maybe least concern or less concern. So
you guys are basically modern treasure hunters. It's not, but without the treasure part.
Well, and that's the...
Without the massive riches potential.
Yeah. It's pretty expensive stuff though in there.
It is. It's high dollar stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's what most of the time, those are the questions we get. We always joke our favorite questions are when they walk up and they say, have you found Jimmy Hoffa yet? The number of times we've gotten that on it is a very classic question. Or can you scan my buddy's head and see if there's anything in his head?
So we
have our quick, you know, quips that we return to those.
When I take people's pictures, like, be careful, I'm going to break your camera.
Exactly.
And I laugh like it's the first time I've heard it, but exactly. It's like, yep, I get that one every single picture I take.
That's
Tracer wire. Explain tracer wire, because I was always kind of annoyed by it. I'm like, what the hell is this going to actually do?
Yep.
Can I take a guess at it?
Please. And tape. Think of tape too. Put tape above. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that process as well?
No.
Yeah, so it's a conductive tape that they'll bury, similar to a tracer wire, X distance above
the
pipe.
Same type of principle.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
But it's I've seen that.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
We've done that. But you put a current through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that current, your machine is picking up on that current, because whatever that pipe, it doesn't actually have a current to find. Correct. Is that how it works?
Correct. So that tracer wire, you induce a certain frequency onto that tracer wire, right? And let's just say it's typically just like a copper line or something.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah.
We'll hook onto it and we have something called a little induction box and we'll induce a certain frequency. And there, depending on the application, there are different ways we tackle that. But what we do is we essentially set the wand to match that frequency and to search for that certain frequency.
Mm.
And then we go through and we'll actually locate it all the way through wherever we're finding that frequency, right?
Does it make it pretty easy to find?
Tracer wires help a lot.
Really?
Yeah, they help a lot. Just because it's another method to verify, right? Because we can, let's say there's a sanitary line. Obviously, that doesn't have an electromagnetic signal on it normally, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a tracer wire there, we can both locate it with the wand, and that gives us a relatively close depth. But then we can also go through with the GPR, and we can really verify it. And it's just another way to double check that we are getting you accurate results.
Hmm. I've put a lot of, when I was a pipe layer, put a lot of tracer wire in the ground because that's, as you lay your pipe, you drag this little spool of thin copper cable along and then kind of tape it on the pipe as you go. And there you go.
That's right.
Right.
What is your liability? How does that work? Are you like, here, sign this waiver?
Because
if you hit something, that's not our problem. How do you get around that? Because there's a lot of potential financial implications of hitting some of these things.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. There is a waiver that you sign when we're on the site.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. And it's fairly common industry standard, I would say, that most locators are going to have some type of waiver that's signed that waives us of liability and puts it all back on the contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, the way we look at liability is to the extent that we were talking about core values, you guys talk about do what's right. There's a component where if we come back out, every hit we're informed of, we want to investigate for fault or no fault. It's not the point initially. It's what can we learn from this? Mm-hmm. What do we miss? Did our tool misfire? What do we need to understand? Does our team member need additional training? Could be any number of things. Could be, in most situations, a miscommunication.
They
didn't see the paint mark on the ground or something like that could have happened. Anyway, you do the investigation, you try to figure out what happened. Uncommonly, we make mistakes, right? And we step up to the plate on those types of situations and figure out how to work through it with the contractor. So yes, generally, broadly speaking, you sign papers that say we're not liable. But the locate companies that we respect in the competitive landscape we play in, I'll come to the table and they're willing to do what's right and figure out how to work through it with the contractor.
Sure.
So. And we want to earn your business all the way through, right?
Yeah.
I think to Chris's point. And that's also why we take training so seriously as a company, right? Because it is a big deal, right? If you are hitting a fiber line and that fiber line's down, that's a lot of money, right? There's a association called the Common Ground Alliance, and they gather these statistics for locators, and they estimate about $30 billion in annual damage to underground utilities.
Woof.
Right. But I mean, that's both direct and indirect cost. But imagine you're a big business and you cut power down. Now your team can't make any sales for 8 hours.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Yeah.
Right. So we understand the ramifications of what we're doing and how we're serving the dirt world. Because it is the dirt world that is actually the one digging, and they're the ones that are on the line for that kind of stuff. But
and since you guys are working on private land and depend on people calling you, you have to be doing things pretty well, or else if you keep missing the mark,
right?
I'm not going to call.
They're
going to
call somebody back. Yeah, it's not accurate.
I've already hit 4 gas lines this month. I don't need a fifth one.
Yep, exactly.
Funny enough, there was this one job I was on. Man, we hit so many utilities. We hit the same gas line 3 times. The same one. It was a subcontractor. It wasn't us, thank God.
Right.
But the first time I went out there, it's terrifying because you have to call the fire department, they have to shut the street down.
Yeah.
It sounds like a damn jet engine coming out of the ground. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Well, most of the time they end up shutting the bucket down. Everything is still right there because they want no spark
area. Yeah.
So you just have this like massive piece of construction equipment right near us.
Yeah. So like, and that's
crazy
the best practice. Like, just get away from
it.
Let the gas company. Yeah. And the gas company comes in their suits. They just suit right up in their, flame retardant FR clothing.
Yep.
And they just get in there and clamp the dent. It was plastic. I don't know. What is that? Like poly or HDPE or something like that. You clamp it down on both ends and all right, boys, we're good to go. And then they hop in their truck and go to the next utility strike. It's like, wow, that was very nonchalant. I thought a gas...
right.
I thought busting a gas
seeping
line
through
deal.
The ground. Yeah. Already. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was really exciting and then super anticlimactic. I'm like, oh, I guess we're good to go. And then the real good ones are when you hit a water main.
Yeah.
That's when the show is
called the gushers.
Yeah, yeah, man.
You flood parking lots, you have parking lot cave-ins, you have all sorts of craziness that can happen.
That's
right?
you create
voids underground.
You create voids.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
I had to be on one the other day where the water main broke for whatever reason. And so it was an emergency call for us to run out there and even find it. Because they had to repair it, but it was so saturated they couldn't even find it.
No way.
Well, yeah, because the leak could be 100 yards away because that's where the water travels to actually get to the surface. And so they don't know where the leak's actually coming from.
And it was a big apartment complex, right? So people are all running out crazy and because they don't have water. And it's 8 o'clock in the morning, so they're trying to get to work. And
yeah.
They're like, we can't find it though. We're digging everywhere and we can't find the broken water line. So
that's crazy.
We had to go
did you find it?
Yeah, we found it.
Okay, good.
We found it. It was
like telling the story and I'm like, where's this going?
Yeah. No, it's still going as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, yeah.
I haven't heard back yet. But.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of emergency work or is that pretty rare? Because the thing with utilities is they need to be going 24, like it doesn't matter if it's Christmas. If you don't have water, it doesn't matter if it's Christmas or not. You gotta figure that out. So is it a lot of weird hours and weird kind of work and all that, or not too much?
I say it's pretty balanced for the most part. I mean, it's construction, so everything's urgent, right?
Everything yeah. Oh, right now. Oh, of course. Oh, yes. Yeah.
But
these stupid locate guys. God, they're just dragging their feet.
Right. They're taking 24 hours to get here. What's their deal?
Yeah.
But no, honestly, our company does a pretty good job, I think, and that we try to stay proactive and. If someone does call in an emergency locate, we definitely try to take care of them, right? But it's not super common.
But to your point, interestingly, when you think about a revenue stream for a business, we'll produce what we'll produce this year, and we'll never know more than 2 to 3 days in advance what's on our schedule to bring in that revenue.
Right.
Oh. So from a volatility standpoint, as you operate and think about how the business works, it's a pretty wild situation.
There's no backlog.
There's no backlog. Yeah. That's right.
There's no backlog. But that said, there's always going to be utilities that need to be found.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Regardless of economic conditions. It's like, landfills are a great business, for example, because it's
always garbage.
You're always going to throw shit away.
That's right. That's right.
But that's crazy. So there's no backlog, huh?
Not really.
No.
Yeah. I mean, most of our work is 24 to 40 hour response time. So to your point of everything's urgent in construction, it may not be 10 p.m. at night that we're making that emergency move, but it is certainly 24 to 40 hours customer expectation that our teams are on site.
Yeah. And it's, you guys are kind of like, the police versus the fire department. The police show up and no one's really happy that the cops are there. Like, oh God, the cops are here. Fire department's like, oh, thank God, fire department's here. This is awesome. You guys are probably more on the police side. Like, okay, locates are here. Like, let's get it done with so we can get on with it.
They're going to tell us why we can't do what we want to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Yeah. This is right in the way.
Yeah. I didn't put that power line there, but it's still just as frustrating.
I wasn't the guy that put it there. I'm just telling you it's there.
Classic messenger.
Right. Yeah. Don't shoot the messenger, right?
Do you guys work closely with vac truck companies? Because I know that's okay. Great. Hey, you're telling me it's here.
Yeah.
You're telling me it's at this depth, but that's still not good enough. So how closely do you work with the daylight groups?
Yeah, we regularly. We have good relationships with several larger entities that many, I'm sure, your listeners would know
of. Badger.
It tends to be you end up finding a customer who wants to marry those services together.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a, hey, we're out here and you need to do this. We hear that. These are the companies that we recommend. So it's no formal quote unquote partnerships, if you will, but definitely good working relationships with those individuals, those companies.
Because that's oftentimes the natural follow up to whatever you're marking is they'll come out and daylight it and verify that yes.
Right.
That is exactly where it's supposed to be.
Well, and a lot of the projects these days have SUE requirements, subsurface utility engineering requirements, D, C, B, A, right? Those levels. And so to hit and achieve those levels and to have an authorized SUE dig in front of you, you have to marry all of these services together in order to get that.
Is that right?
Engineered approval. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. So we all, you know, the earlier phases are research, really go find documents, kind of try to figure out what exists on this site. Then it's a non-destructive search, something like what GPRS would provide. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, marrying that with a soft dig, truly exposing in a non-destructive manner that utility to confirm its location and elevation with precision. So, and that gives you that subsurface utility investigation level A. So utility engineering plan.
It's a whole world, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is every time I see some new spray paint on some roads or something around my house, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. There's about to be some work
going on. There's about to be some work going on. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Because the other day, it was the whole neighborhood was marked up for gas lines.
Oh, yeah.
Going to every house. I'm like, what's going on here? To my disappointment, they're just putting in Google Fiber.
That's correct. Yeah. Like, most of the time, you're never going to see it. It's all, you know.
Yeah, that's not that cool. Yeah, I was hoping for like a whole new water line or something crazy, but yeah, it was just
well, we're the ridiculous ones who walk around with our kids and we're like, see that mark on the ground?
We did that mark. Yeah, you like how those little flags look?
Yeah, we're like, why is that manhole over there? Like, why isn't it over there?
Yeah exactly.
We're always trying to connect the dots.
Yeah.
So how have you guys grown across the country? What were the growing pains there? If you're calling up in a region 24 hours, you got to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of logistics. So how did you guys start to figure that one out?
Yeah. So I think this is some of where our whole endeavor towards development and care for people really came from, because it hinged on the individual we placed in that market. So call it luck, call it great business strategy. Instead of trying to go deep in a single market and get a bunch of team members working in the Toledo or Southeast Michigan, Detroit market, we put up a website and got some traffic, and you'd get a phone call from Southern California or from Dallas or from Miami, and we would catch a flight and go to those job sites. And we thought, hey, if this is happening, maybe we could position somebody in Florida, in Southern California, whatever the case might be, and maybe there's business. So we went wide first. Mm-hmm. And so to do that, then the individuals who were a part of the team at that point were the scheduler, the quoter, the guy who came out and did the work on the job site. And so all of that was managed very locally for the longest time in the business. And you just trusted the team members, answer the phone, care well for the customer, and make sure that they got the work done.
Did you have them use a different name, like a scheduling? Like, I'm Jeff. And then they show up. Yeah, I'm Mike.
Yeah.
So make it be bigger.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Just, you sound very similar.
Yeah. No, it's actually my brother.
Yeah. Close relations.
Family
close
business.
Relations. Yeah.
But those people that you had out in the field, those are the people your customers interact with.
So right.
Those people are how they perceive the company.
That's right. And I think this is synonymous with the culture of the dirt world, but I trust you to give me some feedback here. But they like to know the person they're talking to and the person who's going to show up on the site. And I think early on, that was a big advantage for us because it was one and the same. Mm. And so they grew to trust that you were the one doing the service, you're going to quote it well, and you're going to be, you know, excellent in the field then when you come out and try to answer and solve our problem. So I really do believe that relational component of the business with the customers that we worked with was a huge part of the success we had early on. So
because Your guys' product is something you want to be high quality. At least you'd think most people, it's probably not always that way, but sure. At least if I were doing a project, I would want that to be high quality.
That's right.
And choose someone I trust, because if you get that wrong,
right,
like there's some big problems that will happen.
That's right.
Very quickly.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Huh. Character matters. So we always talk about the three C's when we're hiring: character, competency, and chemistry. Chemistry with the team, competency, the ability to grasp the concepts of what we're teaching them, how they do the service. But then foremost is character.
Yeah. How do you evaluate for character?
Great question. Mm. Yeah. Ask them what they do on the weekend. I don't, you know, we can't actually do that. That's illegal.
Yeah.
But, I've
asked so many things that are illegal in an interview.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm informed after that's actually
you
illegal.
Actually can't. Yeah.
So I can't get to know the person. Check.
No, that's exactly right. It does feel like that, doesn't it? Stupid. When you're running it, it is stupid. I agree.
Yeah.
The interview process, you know, obviously there's screening efforts that go into it, but the most helpful part of the interview process we have is we call it a ride along. And so that team member, if you're interested in joining, then you have to go ride along with one of our guys in the field,
really?
One of our team members, and you go to a job and you see how the job works and how it runs. And so you get a lot of organic, you know, interaction, rubbing shoulders together. How much are they on their phone? How much they seem like they're engaged in what we're actually doing on the job site? And you just pick up anecdotes along the way that help inform that character component and that chemistry component, because they're going to work side by side with the individual that they're in the truck with. And so the competency thing, there's baseline competencies you have to have, but that's not the most critical thing for us. It is character and it is chemistry because of the way these teams are structured.
That's a slick way to do it. Our business, we've done it where we've hired a lot of people contract and basically given them a project and see what they do with it.
Yeah.
And if it's good work and they work well with the team, great. Okay, cool. Yeah. We can keep talking to them. If not, hey, thanks. Still pay them for the project and then we're on our way. And it saved us a lot of heartache.
Well, it seems like it's similar, right? Yeah. That's the same idea in some ways. You're walking with them through the project. They're probably asking a bunch of questions. So in some ways, that's a monetized ride-along.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And you can bullshit your way through an hour-long conversation like what I'm doing right now. But I'm joking. Trick. But bullshitting through a whole day with somebody, that's a tricky proposition. You've got to be really good to hide that long. That's pretty slick.
Yeah.
But then you have to train up your people on how and what to look for, mm-hmm. how to interview, what to look for.
Right. Yeah. And when you scale, as you guys know, that can be difficult. A lot of questions. To your point, how many questions did we ask that were illegal? And so how do you get them trained and ready to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. Constant battle we face. So that's that development effort that we continue to try to focus on is what do we need to do in order to keep this team like right at their growth edge, meeting the demands of the customer and able to staff and fill out this team with the right people. So.
How do you keep the team together? If you have damn near 400 people spread out across the whole country, like how many states do you think you're in?
So we say 40 different markets. So
40 different, I mean,
yeah. So figure, you know, and obviously we're going to hub where the construction hubs. And so those 40 markets are mostly cities. So
a market's like Dallas, Fort Worth, for example.
So nobody Alaska, we have Hawaii, nobody Montana, you know, some of the northern states.
There's no utilities in Montana.
Yeah. So we cut the U like a lot of business. Utilities in Montana. We cut the U like a lot of business around the state. So
how do you keep everybody on the same page?
So that is the constant challenge. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we do it all that well. I think we try a lot of things. I'm curious what you would say. How do you feel like as an organization, we keep you on the same page with, I know how it happens in your market, which is probably good to talk about with your leader in that market. But curious how you feel like the company does keeping you on the same page genuinely.
Yeah, no, I think we do a good job for what we have, right? To your point, Aaron, I mean, we are very spread out across the country and in relatively small teams, right? So how our structure is there are a few project managers, 5 to 10 more or less, that report directly to an area manager, right? And those are the markets that we're kind of talking about earlier. And that relationship is definitely more intimate, right? And more day-to-day. But as far as from our senior leadership team, we do have the internal podcast. We do have even conference calls every once in a while as a team, you know, as a whole company. We try to do as much as we can. But I would say that the communication is pretty constant. I mean, at least a couple times per month, we're getting communication from our CEO via email.
Yeah.
And then other times through, again, internal podcasts or whatever it may be as well.
Alex, the internal podcast is a good idea.
Let's start one.
Yeah, we should do that. We should do that at Build
It. Yeah, right. Because we weren't picking your brains on how to do it before we started recording. You guys obviously do it well.
Easy peasy, man. We don't know if anybody listens to it, though. That's the problem. We do it, but the well part, I don't know about that.
No, that's exactly right, though. So all these methods and mediums we now have today to communicate, the question is it truly effective? And that's the measure. I remember we had a situation a few years back where I sent an email out. It's common for me. And somebody called to ask me a question. I'm like, well, did you read my email? And they're like, which one did you send? When was that? Mm-hmm. You know, like obviously already I'm in trouble. And I said last week, such that they look it up. They're like, oh yeah, no, that was a scroller. I was like, what's a scroller? They're like, well, if I have to move my thumb more than twice up my phone, I'm done reading your email. And I was like,
fair.
That is fair, right? Yeah. That makes total sense to me. Once you said it, but I'm like, well, crap, I'm just working away to write up this massive email that I think
it's just people a work of art.
Exactly.
Like, man, and they this don't, is a good one.
They don't care.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so this is the thing about the people stuff. We work in a productive industry where people build stuff. You can measure progress very easily. How many yards of dirt? How many sticks of pipe? What did you do today from a productivity standpoint? But you start to get into the people thing. People are squishy. You can't go measure people. Yep. And especially someone like you, you don't have a product you create every day. You can't go measure. Yeah, I slayed X linear feet of pipe. Okay, good. You're doing a good job. Right. How the hell do I know if you're doing a good job at your job or not?
Right.
It's squishy. It's right. hard to measure. And I think the industry is so used to the stuff that's easy to measure that let's just focus over there. The whole people thing, that's just a lot of work and everybody's different. Let's not deal with that. Let's just right. focus on what we do.
Right.
And we don't need to focus on the people thing. And then, well.
Lo and behold, you do.
well, I that's what I'm saying, yeah. but we're still trying to get that into people's heads.
Yeah.
What you guys have probably a unique perspective on the industry like we do. You probably see a lot of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What trends have you guys noticed? What have you noticed out there? What's the market look like?
In terms of people, like focus on people specifically, or Mark, take the question wherever we want to go. Choose my own adventure.
Yeah, what have you noticed? Yeah, yeah. Dealer's choice.
I mean, we talk often about the hiring market. That's a common thing for the last, 5 years at least, of how difficult it is to find people in construction.
Yeah.
And we talk often about how it seems like, hey, the pipeline for work out there is 2+ years long. So to your point earlier, we were talking about everybody needs a utility to locate. Well, hey, if we've got a diminishing resource in terms of staff from a construction perspective, no shortage of projects in the pipeline, then it seems to me we've got a lack of equilibrium that's going to be tough to maintain. So this pipeline for work is going to continue to be long. Sure. So for us, I think we look and see an industry that's starved for talent in a world that thinks some sort of higher education is the ticket.
Yeah.
And they miss out on the wonderful world of true craftsmen who know how to, and you know, you kind of say laying stick in the ground or something like that, but there's a real craftsmanship to doing that and doing it well. And it just gets missed because it's involving dirt, and we think it somehow is lesser in value to me getting some job, you know, punching up my long emails or something like mm-hmm. that. And so, so I think there's just a real trend where we want to see more value in that space for those team members on those job sites. And I think we want to find that for the team members who come. It's not just locating that pipe. It's stitching together a picture, as Preston said earlier, that keeps somebody safe, that helps your community build something pretty fantastic. You're a component of the bigger machine that is, you know, this evolution that we have of trying to build something beautiful in the communities in which we live. So,
sure.
Yeah. And I'm excited, honestly, for
if you're looking for a job, let me know. A spokesperson or something like that.
That's a good job.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I come off all political and stuff, and I don't even know how to like measure.
No, apologies. That was very well said.
You can just mute me anytime.
Yeah.
Chris is our polished guy in the company. He handles all that.
Well said.
Yeah. But I'm a young guy, right? I'm one of those millennials. We've all heard about those guys.
Don't know how to work and damn millennials. How old are you?
25.
Yeah.
So I'm going to spend the next 40 years serving the dirt world, right? Mm-hmm. And serving the construction industry.
Sure.
And it's pretty obvious, you know, what some of our shortcomings are as far as a people standpoint. But I'm also incredibly excited because I think we are noticing those, right? And I know you're young too, 27?
27, yeah.
So, and I'm speaking for myself and maybe you agree or not, but I am highly drawn to that mission. Right. And what Chris was saying just barely, what we do really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Try going without power or water for 24 hours. You'll definitely get a call.
It's pretty, right? It's pretty funny how that works, isn't it? Yeah. Nothing else matters if you don't have power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just, you turn that switch off, nothing else matters.
Right. We're essential workers for a reason. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we are seeing, and your company's a great example of this. We are seeing more and more people become very good storytellers on that mission and what we're doing. And the most influential people in any industry are those best storytellers, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm excited because I'm seeing that more and more. And the people I talk to on site, I mean, what you said earlier, we gain a lot of exposure. We were talking earlier, I worked for 173 different customers last year.
Wow.
And over 400 different jobs.
Wow.
So you see a lot of different sides. You get a lot of exposure to the industry.
Yeah.
And
people you see more than I do in that region.
That surprises me.
We go to Montana. So, got you.
But I think people are recognizing that, and it's something that is being talked about. And I think it's something that we're just looking to see how we can do it and how we can work it out.
The mission piece is so critical. This is where this is. So we're in a unique inflection point in our business right now. We're transitioning software business, and we're just thinking way bigger picture. I mean, I am up in the clouds right now, for better or for worse. What the heck is the problem, and why aren't these companies figuring it out? That's one of the core problems, is that everybody's trying to approach it from their perspective, what was most important to them or is most important to them. And that was previous generations. Am I going to make a good living? Am I going to have a good career? Mm-hmm. And so that's the narrative, is you can, you know, make X amount of dollars by the time you're 22 without debt, and you can have a career, not a job. And that doesn't register to me as a 20, like, no. That doesn't mean shit to me. Hmm. What means something to me is knowing I need to make sure the money works. So I need that taken care of. That's a box I check. Hierarchy of needs. That's at kind of the bottom. Can you pay me? Do you have benefits? Okay. And then we go up a little bit more. Are you going to really care for me? Are you going to pay me well? And, but then you keep going up, and that mission piece, why the hell should I work for you? If you don't have an answer for that as an employer, there's no secret to why you have a labor problem. And I tell people, if you ask anybody in this office that works for us, why the hell are you here? They'll have probably some pretty good answers, because we start on that from day one, because that's what this next generation wants. Because it's not, it is about, let's make money and let's support our families and let's have a nice house and so on and so forth. But then, okay, great, that's taken care of. And I can get that in a lot of damn places nowadays. Why the hell am I here?
Right. What have you found in your mission that seems to resonate most with the team when they sign on with you guys?
Because it's so exciting, because the dirt world is everywhere. And I'm sure Alex could probably speak to this if he had a microphone. Sorry, Alex, I'll just speak for you, because you don't realize how important the dirt world is. And then you come in to BuildWit and you start to understand, holy smokes, this really is foundational. Right. Everybody really does depend on this, and they have a big problem. But the good news is we're here to help. And that is a really compelling narrative. That's a really compelling mission to be on.
Is it the help component? Like, hey, one, you see something that's way bigger than you, right? Like, hey, this is far bigger than one I had concept of, and two, than I could ever think I could have an impact on by myself. But then there has to be some movement towards action. Is it the fact that they could actually help now make an impact, and that's what they kind of seem to be latching onto?
That's exactly it.
And it seems, is that sort of what you were saying? You're latching onto, like, hey, these are the needs, and I can help meet this need for somebody.
Absolutely, right? And I guess more simply, it's I want a cool job that solves really cool problems, right? That is not what initially drew me to JPRS, right? I was looking for that. This is an incredible opportunity to grow and develop as an individual and make very competitive pay and very good people that I met so far. But that's all it was that drew me in. But then what's retaining me, and you asked this question very openly the other day, is like, why would you stay with us? Like, honestly, like, why do you choose to do that? And that wasn't necessarily to me. It was just, you know, in general, like, why would someone want to stay with GPRS? And I thought a lot about that. And again, it is this mission, right? It's like, what problems am I solving? How am I serving the world? And what contribution am I making? Right. And I think that is something that we can instill. And even you say this, Chris, that vision, that mission leaks, right? That's, as leaders, that's something that we need to constantly be following up on and repeating, even if it's written out on our website, even if it's in our signature email, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. It is something that we constantly need to be pushing on and following up on, because that's what keeps us here, and that's what keeps us motivated as well.
It's nonstop. Every single day I talk about the mission.
Yep.
Every single day. Draw as many, you know, connect as many dots to that damn mission as we possibly can.
Yep.
And continuously remind people, this is why we're here. This is why we're here. This is why we're here. Yep.
And I think at GPRS, we our mission obviously is to serve the dirt world, right? And have that vision of 100% subsurface damage prevention. But when I learned that our purpose is actually to create opportunities for people and then deliver customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we do that is through subsurface damage prevention, right?
Sure.
But the fact that's what kept me in, I guess. And that's what's keeping me in is that, no, like I'm here to create opportunities for people.
Yeah.
And we're just doing it through this awesome thing that, to your point earlier, is ubiquitous, right? You look all around you and everything we touch in a way, right? There are our projects are everywhere and our infrastructure is everywhere.
Hmm. Pretty cool. Pretty cool what you guys got going.
Appreciate that.
What's the future look like?
That's a good question. So the future, I think, involves a few things. First and foremost, it is amazing to me still how much of the market from a utility locating perspective there is to go after and try to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general, the job sites that could use the service more, that still exists. It's not like a fully tapped out market or something to that mm-hmm. effect. So I think that's a component we continue to go after just organically, the core services that we started the business with. I think what comes...
So you guys are underutilized, would you say?
Yeah, I think as an industry, I wouldn't even say GPRS specifically, but yeah. I think as an industry, to your point, it's kind of like do we have to call?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Instead of shifting to when we call, they help us avoid something. Mm, right. Does that make sense? I think there's a cultural component there that I do think is on the shift. But at the same time, I think, as you pointed out earlier, it tends to be we're the lowest guy on the job site that day. They didn't want to call us. We're the police officer, not the fireman.
Right? Sure. Yeah.
So I think after that, for us, we're continuing to look at adjacent services, things that would marry well with you as a contractor need me to come out and find the pipe underground, but now you're concerned that pipe is leaking. Okay, maybe we could add on leak detection services. Mm-hmm. And now you actually want to inspect that sanitary line to discern if there's any obstructions or lateral conflicts or that. And so we can do some video pipe inspection for you.
Okay.
And now, oh, you want a comprehensive map of your entire facility to know where these lines are, and anytime you add a new line, you need it to be updated and you need some sort of data management reality for that. Hey, maybe we can come up with a solution that fits there. So those are some of the adjacencies that we're looking at. So I think that the idea of 100% subsurface damage prevention is a compelling, not just internally, I think externally, case for customers to grow in their interest. So yeah, I think our hope is to take that message wider and wider.
It's big time, man.
Yeah.
What... While I have you guys here, you guys work for general contractors and heavy civil contractors.
Oh, yeah.
What would you say the differences are between those two groups?
Heavy civil guys typically self-perform a lot of their work.
Yeah, correct.
Right? Yes. So it is a different dynamic on the job site. Because
but how's the dynamic? What's the mentality? Like, how are they different?
My dad's a general contractor, Aaron. So, yeah.
I was hoping you were going to go in the other direction. Like, those general contractors, man, let me tell you.
So I got to be careful what I say
right?
No, but honestly, our customer, for the most part, our customer base, I mean, they all do really good. I would say the difference is, again, that the dirt guys that primarily self-perform their work, they're very more knowledgeable. How do I want to phrase this? They have a lot more invested into the actual product of how it's going to be because they're the ones actually carrying out that work right then, right?
That's interesting.
Where maybe a general contractor, their role is more mitigating risk,
yeah,
right? And they're trying to handle that whole process and a little more big picture. So it is a different dynamic, and I mean, pros and cons both ways probably. But
practically, the civil guys on the site they want to know what's here so I can get this job done and moving, right? Mm-hmm. And the general is going to look and say, well, what's your insurance policy look like? Let's talk about the risk perspective, right? Like, there's just a very different tact to how they want to go about getting the job done. And the general is thinking about the relationship with that customer because he wants to build their next building.
Right, sure.
And the guy in the field on the bucket is looking to be safe and make sure this pipe goes in the ground on schedule and that they put a pretty complex, you know, system together. So
yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. It's interesting that you guys bridge that. I mean, are you back and forth typically? You could be is it typically just underground utility location if that's your expertise, and then you do buildings, or do you
both
lop over?
We do both.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes I'll be, you know, on the 12th floor of a building scanning for post tension cables. And then the next minute I'm, you know, in this heavy manufacturing facility looking for utilities before they trench or whatever.
So sometimes even on the same job site, 12 stories up, come down, fire up a different set of equipment, go find, you know, the trench line for, you know, the new sanitary run or something like that that's going in can happen. So
is that right?
The technology is pretty much the same, right? I mean, it's very, very similar. So the expertise and the technical skill you have regardless of what you're doing there.
When you say you're underutilized, if this is a good opportunity to educate your customer base on how to utilize you correctly, how do you be a friend to them? How do you be the fireman? What kind of advice would you give people that use utility locating services to better use utility locating services?
Yeah. So we mentioned that our book of business never has much more than 2 to 3 days on its schedule because industry-wide, that's how our service is considered. And so I think a tip that I would offer to the dirt world is to consider planning that locate out in advance and try to have the different subs on the site compile their scopes of work in one shot. And the reason is not just better planning, having us on the schedule sooner, making sure, you know, all of those things happen logistically. You'll end up with a potentially better locate because now you've got multiple facets tying in the same job site and we're going to be able to find more information and all of it completes a bigger puzzle picture that then helps inform each of those individual scopes of work. So I really think one of the things I would encourage the dirt world is to look at drawing us more in on the planning side. And by us, certainly we're here repping GPRS, but it's the industry in general can be a help on the project planning side, not just on the, oh crap, I got to put a pipe in the ground and I didn't get a locate yesterday. So,
I mean, I think that's for the industry over. I think the industry can be more proactive overall because it's you're proactive, you're planning, and then you get into a job and just shit is flying everywhere. And schedule's a mess and weather's, and then that all goes out the window and now you're just in total reactive mode.
That's right.
And now, oh shoot, I need to locate for tomorrow. Call them up. The whole project gets into that reactive state. But that's if you're in a more proactive state, regardless of what's going on around you, I think you'd have a much more successful project. But what the hell do I know?
Well, it seems like you know a fair bit, is my guess. I also think that that's a universal principle, that it's not just in the dirt world that you should be or desire to be more proactive. I think the contractors in that space who continue to grow and find themselves expanding their service footprint are those that have that for planning ability and layer that in. They may need to react today, but it's nested inside an overall plan that's iterated, pivoted, agile, moving. It sounds like that's what y'all are doing here at BuildWit too. It's, hey, best laid plans of mice and men. And then today we're going to get into this thing, mix it up, replan it again tomorrow. But that planning effort never stops, right?
Right.
So
what would you say anything to the actual folks doing the work, like running the excavator? Is there stuff they should know to use you guys better and to digest the information you give them a little bit better, or is it pretty straightforward?
Yeah, I have a thought. I can give you a chance to speak here too, but
you go ahead first.
Okay. So I would just say when in doubt, ask a question. Just reach out to us or find out who used us on the job site. And our flags have a number on it. Every utility locator that's got some scale is going to have a flag with a number you can call to understand what's going on. So good. If you are in doubt, ask the question before putting that bucket in the ground.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, that's simple, but that is like, it's like a man asking for directions. You know, I know that's not really a thing anymore because of Google.
Google.
But there's a lot of big egos, pride, and I know what's going on here.
Yeah, I can feel it when I'm digging. I can feel it.
Yeah. Which I don't. I think there's some truth to that.
I agree.
Also, not
exactly, but is it still worth the risk? Right. That's the component here. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
And I would agree with that. I think miscommunication, to Chris's point earlier, is definitely our number one factor in our jobs that do go bad. Mm. Right. We did do, you know, thousands of jobs last year, and we had a very, very good rate of accuracy, right? Over 99%. But that's still not enough. Right? Because those few jobs, that is dangerous. That is costing a lot of money. That's costing a lot of time.
Sure.
And even those ones that did go bad or were our fault, it is primarily not due to lack of technical skill or expertise. It's because I could have been a more effective communicator and I could have led that person through that process or owned that process from inception to actually coring that hole or making that cut, right? And so that is something I think we're trying to work on, and we're looking forward to as well, is improving that accuracy overall.
Sure. Yep. Well, I very much did. You learn something? Yeah, this was, I very much enjoyed this. How do people find you guys?
Best place to go, gprsinc.com.
gprsinc.com.
Yep. You can locate the local office number next to you, you know, where you live, where you're working, where your job site is, and ring us up. Happy to come figure out how to help you out.
Yeah, but if you're in Montana.
Mm-mm. No luck in Montana.
We do drive there, though.
Yeah.
But I think the Salt Lake guys, I think, drive there, and maybe maybe
get up else, there. What region are you in?
I'm in Orlando.
Orlando. Oh, yeah, you said Central Florida. Orlando is hopping, man.
It's popping, man.
Oh,
it's crazy.
That market
is... Thank you, tourism.
Nuts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went down there with, I don't know if you guys worked with them, Hughes Brothers Construction.
Yeah.
They're doing a big subdivision. Probably 30 minutes west of town.
Uh-huh. Yeah, big, lots of development going on west of town. Mm-hmm. It's going to be wild to see over the course of time. Well, now we're digging in Central Florida future, but you know how these communities all end up connecting as they move up towards Ocala and as they move.
I think it's just going to be just
sprawl,
one giant blob in the middle of Central. They're going far.
Yeah,
it's out there. They're like, how big is this one? Well, it's, I think, 27,000 acres. 27? What? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
And they just keep going further and further. Like, where are all these people coming from?
Well, California. Where are they going to go work? Are they driving into town each day? Like, how does that even work? Like, what's that drive time like?
Yeah. Dude, well, I don't know, man.
COVID environment, I guess.
Remote work, I guess, right?
Yeah. I don't live down there. That's not my problem. I can bike to work now. I just moved right here. So.
Did you?
Right? Oh, yeah.
What a cool area. How long has the development in this section of town been happening? It seems like, what, maybe the last 10 years?
Probably 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
It used to be pretty new.
Yeah. It used to be real industrial.
Yeah.
And then what happened was we scooted the industry out because, well, it's all about cost per, you know, how much money can we make per square foot? Yeah. Well, we need housing. So let's go build these garbage plastic monstrosities everywhere and charge people way too much for them. And that'll make us a good return on investment for our REIT. And it's a little, you can tell I'm a little frustrated about it, but.
No, I think it's, we were joking about it when we had lunch before coming in and I said, I think they call it, the cool word is gentrification. That makes it sound okay. But in the end, you kind of like, what got displaced in the process here?
Right? Yeah, gentrification. Yeah. A bunch of garbage apartment buildings where we are gentrifying, but it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we really appreciate you guys coming out to Nashville. Thanks for being flexible.
Appreciate the time. Absolute pleasure to talk to you guys and congrats on all the success. Excited to see where you guys go.
Likewise.
Thanks.
Likewise. All right, everybody. Check them out. GPRSinc.com.